What happened in Acts 5? Well, the lights went out. Well, the lights went out on Ananias and Sapphira. Permanently. I think it's very, very interesting and encouraging and amazing to go in the scriptures and see what happened. And after Ananias and Sapphira, who lied to God, and their lives were taken, and fear came upon the church, and through the hands of the apostles, many signs and wonders were done in verse 12. And believers were increasingly added to the Lord, multitudes of both men and women. And then the high priest and others got upset over that, and they laid hands on them and told them not to speak this way anymore. And so when the officers came and did not find them in the prison, they said, "Hey, they're not there." What happened? So they found them in the temple and teaching the people. So then the captain came forth and brought them out and said, "You know, we told you not to say anything like this." And they said, "Well, we ought to obey God rather than man." And then they were furious and plotted to kill them. And then Gamaliel stood up and gave them some reasoning. "Hey, if this thing is not of God, then it's going to collapse anyway, so don't worry about it. But it is of God. You can't fight against it, so leave them alone." So anyway, they continued to daily in the temple and in every house, they did not cease teaching and preaching Jesus as the Christ. We don't have, at this point in this country, fear of being physically persecuted for preaching the gospel. In some parts of the world, I guess it still does happen. In fact, when Don Iverson was here a couple weeks ago and talked to us about the work in India and some of the difficulties that arose there against those who obeyed the gospel. They would not have any association with them, abandon them, in some ways, some cases of physical attacks. So it's a source of encouragement, and maybe one day some of the laws that they're trying to pass now might have an effect on what is taught from the pulpit at this place. And then how are we going to react in a case like that? Are we going to submit to the authorities when they're trying to teach something other than the will of God, or are we going to stand up for the Lord? I think hopefully we know the answer to that. Then beginning in verse 6, or chapter 6, and it says the multitudes of men and women were multiplying, and the number of the disciples were multiplying. And then what happened in chapter 6 regarding the Grecian widows? Pardon? Oh, they were being neglected in their daily ministration. What do you think that means? Well, there was a large number of people in Jerusalem. We had how many converted in Acts 2?
3,000.
How many more in Acts 4 and verse 4? 5,000 men. So I don't know. One commentator said, you know, at least 5,000 people here in Jerusalem, maybe more. But there was a large number. And there's Freddie. Freddie, so good to see you out, brother. So it's understandable. And there had been contributions, and I guess there was not, it wasn't divided equally as in a socialistic or communistic system, but it was given to everyone as they had need. And so it's understandable that some could be overlooked amongst all these thousands that were present there. And so they were complaining about that. And so these Hellenists, or these Grecian widows, they were Jews of foreign birth and Greek education, and they were called Hellenes, or Greeks. And many of them were perhaps not permanent residents in Jerusalem, but they hadn't gone home from the time that they came there and when the first gospel sermon was preached. And so the apostles did something very wise. And what was that? Pardon? Yeah, they chose, said, seek out from yourselves seven men of good report, and so that they might handle this problem, handle this need, because we don't need to stop doing what we're doing and preaching the gospel of Christ and start waiting on tables, start doing something like that. Now, those names that were given, were Philip. This is in verse 5 of chapter 6 in Acts. Philip, Prochorus, Nicanor, Timon, Parmenas, and Nicholas, a proselyte from Antioch. And all of these names are Greek. So they had the persons that would have a special interest in the Grecian widows, and assign them to take care of things. Now, some believe that these seven are the first of what group of men? Deacons. Now, it doesn't call them deacons per se, but that word, a form of that word, diakonos, is used in talking about service here. So it could very well be. And they were there to take care of some of the physical needs that are involved. But as we'll find out, deacons are not limited to taking care of physical needs. Why is that? Why do I say that? Pardon?
I said any Christian can take care of somebody's needs.
That's true. But what about these seven? Okay, they started doing preaching, and especially who?
Stephen.
Of those seven, five of them, that's the only mention of their name in the scriptures. We don't know anything else about them. But Stephen, and who else? Philip. So this selection of these seven pleased the multitude, and so that resolved that problem, and it says that. That the church continued to grow, and more were added to the church because of the giving the apostles time to do other work. Now Stephen began to do other than preach. In verse 8 says, full of faith and power, he did great wonders and signs among the people. And I think this is the first mention of anyone, of even the apostles, doing miracles in the New Testament. You can double check on that. But there arose from what is called the synagogue of freedmen, Cyrenians, Alexandrians, and those from Cilicia and Asia, disputing with Stephen. It says, but they were not able to resist the wisdom and the spirit by which he spoke. So evidently these freedmen who supposedly were Jews who had been Roman captives, and they had been released, and along with these others from Alexandria and Cilicia and other parts, had formed their own synagogue. And Stephen doing his preaching there did not please them, so they were disputing with him. But Stephen began to speak, and they took him and put him before the council because they were not able to withstand the wisdom that he chose. And so the division there was division in their own ranks. Some were opposing Stephen, and of course there were others who were obeying the gospel and following after him. There's a small print. Then they secretly induced men to say, "We have heard him speak blasphemous words against Moses and God." And they stirred up the people and the elders and the scribes, and they came upon him, seized him, and brought him to the council. And they set up false witnesses who said, "This man does not cease to speak blasphemous words against the holy place, this holy place, and the law. For we have heard him say that this Jesus of Nazareth will destroy this place and change the customs which Moses delivered to us." Now that is something that is not new to us, to talk about false witnesses, is it? Jesus faced this same thing in Mark, the 14th chapter. You want to turn to that? Somebody read Mark 14, 56 through 58 real loud. And then Matthew, the 26th chapter, verses 59 through 61, which is some similar comments.
"Now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witnesses against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the last came two false witnesses and said, 'This fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days.' And the high priest arose and said unto him, 'Answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witnesses against thee?'"
Okay, thank you. They really weren't interested in the case of Jesus, nor are they interested in the case of Stephen, of really finding witnesses. They're just trying to find an excuse to do what they had planned to do. And so they didn't really need, they didn't want to go through the motions, so they couldn't be criticized for it.
Jerry.
Yes, sir.
It's amazing. The false witnesses said something, verse 14, which came to pass. At the time, it was a false witness. But the temple was destroyed.
Right.
Well, it all, the customs were changed.
And actually, in the case of Stephen, I'm jumping ahead. He brought him before the council, and all who sat in the council, looking steadfastly at him, saw his face as the face of an angel. Now, I want you to tell me, what did his face look like? What did the face of an angel look like?
Stephen's face before it changed, after it changed.
What is an angel?
Messenger.
Huh? Actually, the angels are mentioned, I looked it up, and I wrote it down, I think, 200 and some times in the 192 times in the Bible that the angels are mentioned. And of course, they appeared in bodily form in some cases. In Matthew, the fourth chapter, in verse 11, and if you happen to know what that is in that chapter, it's the temptation of Jesus. And so after he resisted the temptation, then angels came and ministered unto him. And then in Luke 22nd chapter in verse 43, Jesus was in the garden praying, and he'd said, "Father, if it be thy will, let this cup pass from me." An angel came and strengthened him. I'd forgotten that a while back and reading and found that so the angels came. Of course, the angel came to Joseph in the first chapter of Matthew in verse 20, talking about the birth of Jesus. In Acts the fifth chapter in verse 19, which is right here where the apostles were in prison and angels were involved in that. And in the 8th chapter of Acts in verse 26. Angel of the Lord spoke to Philip. Of course, that to tell him to do what?
To go take himself to the Ethiopian.
Yeah, go down to the Ethiopian eunuch. And then what about Galatians, the first chapter in verse 8?
If we or an angel preach any other gospel than that which we have preached, let him be anathema.
Let him be anathema. Even an angel or any other man preach any other gospel, let him be anathema. And then, of course, in Revelation, the first chapter and the very first verse, it talks about the angel going to who? The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants things which must shortly take place. And he sent and signified by his angel to his servant John. And then in the last chapter, 22nd chapter in verse 16. I, Jesus, have sent my angel to testify to you these things in the churches. I am the root and the offspring of David, the bright and morning star. So angels were there in various ways. We don't know. The ones that came on the road to Emmaus and spoke, supposedly angels. Angel appeared to Abraham and to Sarah. So the angels are there, but we don't have any evidence that they're little white people with wings. But
yeah. Entertain angels unaware.
Be, what's the first part of that verse? Be anyway, be careful who you entertain, because you might entertain angels unawares. Through the providence of God, then we might get a message sometime from an angel. We don't know who it is. But here he is And they looked on him, and whatever his countenance was, they thought it was the face of an angel. So it had to be something very pleasant to look upon, and a very satisfied face. And then Stephen begins his speech there, and even though the false witnesses were brought up, which is what happens, you know, in this day and time, that's done in life. It's done in political life. It's kind of frustrating when you have someone that you're supposed to select someone for a high office, and the advertisements and the things that are said about it. In some cases, we don't know everything that goes on, but in some cases, we know that it's just an absolute untruth. So you have a false witness that's brought to discredit the individual rather than standing on the ground of what the material is, what the facts are, and not just because that you disagree with that person. But Stephen goes and speaks and takes through the history back from Abraham and through Moses. They were accusing him of denying and demeaning Moses, but yet in his speech, he actually upheld Moses and said what a role that he had in their life. The only difference is they wanted to continue with what existed, and he was giving them the fulfillment of the prophecies that Christianity evolved, and even Moses himself, there's going to be one raised up after me, which is greater than me. And now they have rejected that one. He connected with the fulfillment, the chief points of his argument from Abraham, and he says in chapter 7 and verse beginning with verse 5, and God gave him no inheritance in it, not even enough to set his foot on. But even when Abraham had no child, he promised to give it to him for a possession and to the descendants after him. But God spoke in this way, that his descendants would dwell in a foreign land and that they would bring them into bondage and oppress them 400 years. And then God, he says, God will judge him. So he began to say that he gave him the covenant of circumcision. He begat Isaac, circumcised him the eighth day, and Isaac Jacob, and Jacob the 12 patriarchs. And then after that, he begins to recount the circumstances which brought the people down into Egypt in order that the rejection of Joseph and the whole salvation of the whole family through him might stand out before those that were listening to him and made to bear on this conclusion. He says, beginning in verse 9, and the patriarchs, moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt, and God was with him, delivered him out of his afflictions and gave him favor and wisdom in the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he made him governor over Egypt and all his house. Then he goes on to talk about the famine and then the second time they came down, that Joseph made himself and his family known to Pharaoh. And 75 souls went down into Egypt, and Jacob died. And he and his fathers were carried over into Sychem, into the sepulcher, which he bought for a sum of money from the sons of Emor, the father of Sychem. So after that, from this glance at the leading points in the history of Joseph, Stephen then moves on to the case of Moses and telling them that they had rejected him in like manner, like they had rejected the others, and were finally delivered by him. And that's beginning in verse 17. And then it talks about Moses being down there and seeing one of his brethren wronged, and so he killed the Egyptian, and he was found out, so he fled to Midian and began a sojourn there of how long? 40 years. And then he had two sons down there. There were other incidents in the life of Moses that he talks about too. After the 40 years, then he comes back, and then he's in the wilderness, has a flame of fire in the bush, and was told at that time, and I think that's another place where the angel appeared and said, take off your shoes because you're in your holy ground, you're on holy ground. As I mentioned earlier, verse 37 says that this is that Moses who said to the children of Israel, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. Him shall ye hear. This is he who was in the congregation in the wilderness with the angel who spoke to him on Mount Sinai, and with our fathers, the one who received the living oracles to give to us, whom our fathers would not obey but rejected. And in their hearts they turned back to Egypt, saying to Aaron, make us gods to go before us, for as for this Moses who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. So to keep in front of their minds the ill treatment that was received by Moses in the hands of the people, then he goes on to talk about how they rejected Moses and they persuaded Aaron to do what? Pardon? Build an idol. And this instance, of course, of rejection of Moses was a more flagrant than the first. And since it had occurred right after God's manifestation of his presence to Moses, and they acknowledged that it was he who had brought them out of Egypt, and yet in a short period of time, they turned their back on him, and they asked for an idol and worship it, made a calf, and said, this is the one that's brought us out of Egypt. And then in the beginning of verse 41, Stephen shows that the same people who so often rejected the servants of God rejected God himself. And that's in the calf. And then God says, I'll carry you away into Babylon. So instead of either admitting or denying the charge of blasphemy against the temple, Stephen doesn't really directly say, no, this is it, and this is it. He just recited the entire history to show why that it was God's will in bringing forth the Son of God, fulfilling prophecy to bring forth him and establish the church in their lifetime. But they had rejected that. And then after just going through all of this history and reminding things that they really should know, these were the men that studied and taught the people, and they should know all this history and all these facts, but he reminds them of it and ties it all together, and is very reasoned and logical in his approach. And it's like he finally said, these guys aren't listening to me, I gotta wake them up. So he says, you stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears, you always resist the Holy Spirit as your fathers did, so do you. Which of the prophets did your fathers not persecute? And they killed those who foretold the coming of the just one, of whom you now have become the betrayers and murderers, who have received the law by the direction of angels and have not kept it. So they would not listen to the reason things. And what would happen while they're sitting there and listening to all of this logical teaching that Stephen is giving to them, and then why all of a sudden he starts getting very straightforward in what he's saying to them, what do you expect would happen, and what did happen? Sir? They got angry, and what did they do?
Well, started gnashing on him with their teeth.
It's hard to imagine. Now, here you got the high priest and all these people up here, and they're getting down and with their big robes and flowing after and biting Stephen, and then they finally stone him. They controlled themselves for a while, but they couldn't stand it anymore. And it was not really just a sudden burst of passion. They hadn't been able to resist in debate the wisdom and the spirit by which he spoke, and now it rested on them to make a decision of what to do, and they had no course but just to get mad and go after him. And that happens, and that happens again today in debate when a person is losing the argument by discussing the facts. They will start name-calling. They might not end up stoning you, but they'll start name-calling. And as one of the commentators said, this is a strange way for the court to break up, for the whole body of 70 grave rabbis whose official duty it was to watch for the faithful and regular proceedings of law, leaving their seats and rushing with a wild mob amid hideous outcries and tumultuous rage. So the sudden execution of a prisoner absolutely untried and uncondemned. So Then Stephen, while this was going on, he looked, verse 55, but he, being full of the Holy Spirit, looked steadfastly into heaven and saw the glory of God and Jesus standing at the right hand of God, and said, behold, I see the heavens opened and the Son of Man standing at the right hand of God. Then they cried out with a loud voice and stopped their ears and rushed upon him with one accord. So they just couldn't stand it anymore. They had the whole speech, and then when he actually says that I see the Son of God, actually the Son of Man, and this is the only time that expression is used, other than when used by Jesus to call him Son of Man. But there was somebody in the audience there, somebody outstanding that was in the audience there, Saul. And what was he doing? There's no evidence, and he wasn't actually throwing any stones, but he was standing there guarding their garments. Their garments were laid at his feet, and he refers to that later. In chapter 8 and verse 1 says, now Saul was consenting to his death at that time. A great persecution arose against the church which was at Jerusalem, and they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria except the apostles. And devout men carried Stephen to his burial and made great lamentation over him. As for Saul, he made havoc of the church, entering every house and dragging off men and women, committing them to prison. But the next verse is so amazing. Therefore, those who were scattered went everywhere preaching the word. Now here Saul is going into houses and dragging out men and women and killing and just causing havoc in the church. They went everywhere preaching the word. It's a... It's hard to imagine what those people went through, and yet the courage they had to continue preaching the gospel. As I said earlier, we don't have, at this point in this country, we don't have physical persecution, but we do have other kinds of persecution. And right now in this land, the atheists and the humanists are doing everything they can to deride the church and deride the Bible in general. I saw a TV show not too long ago, and one of the things, this man was a biblical historian, and he was trying to explain away the crossing of the Red Sea or the falling of the walls of Jericho. You know, it was because of a natural disaster and not because of anything done by God. Stephen is only mentioned, I think, seven times, in seven verses in the scriptures, and most of them in this account here. But he's mentioned a couple of other times in the 11th chapter of Acts in verse 19. It says, "Now they who were scattered abroad from the persecution which arose about Stephen traveled as far as Phoenicia and Cyprus and Antioch, speaking the word to none but the Jews." And so we learn from this that, Philip was preaching in Samaria and Saul in Damascus and Arabia. And also in the 22nd chapter of Acts, that's where Paul is recounting the history of his conversion. In verse 16, 22:16 says what? He said that he was told to arise and be baptized and wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord. And in that same discussion, he says he returned to Jerusalem, was praying in the temple, was in a trance, and saw him saying to me, "Make haste and depart quickly out of Jerusalem, for they will not receive your testimony concerning me." And I said, "Lord, they know that I was imprisoning and beating in every synagogue those who believe on thee. And when the blood of thy witness And when the blood of thy witness Stephen was shed, I myself was standing by and consenting to his death and guarding the raiment of those that slew him. And he said to me, depart, for I will send you far hence to the Gentiles." So the death of Stephen was something that had a great impact many years later on the Apostle Paul because of his role in it, standing there and okaying it and guarding the garments of those that stoned Stephen, and then going into the houses and dragging out men and women later. And I guess Paul could legitimately say, call himself the chief of sinners. He says, "I'm the chief of sinners because I persecuted the church of the Lord." But being the chief of sinners, it gives the power of the gospel that he was able to be forgiven. And he says, "Putting those things that are behind, I press on toward the mark for the prize of the high calling in Christ Jesus." So no matter what your past history can be, is, God can wash away, through the blood of Christ, wash away those sins and add you to his church. Thank you.